Welcome, everybody, to Survive in Advance on the Grilly Crew Sports Network. Steve's in L.A. It's 8 o'clock, so he just woke up. So at least he didn't get to see me yawning while the intro music was playing. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, of course, here with Steve Risley, 1981 national champion for the Indiana Hoosiers. And tonight, on this show, we're going to break down tonight's NCAA championship game between UConn and Purdue. We're going to talk a little Kentucky basketball, which we all love. We're going to talk Caitlin Clark, Iowa versus South Carolina, the national championship game. Josh Schertz goes from Indiana State to St. Louis. But we're going to start off with John Calipari because, I mean, what's it like, Steve, when you wake up, you think you're a blue blood program, you just lost your coach to Arkansas?
Well, my understanding is that's not necessarily Calipari's call. That apparently Kentucky faithful, led by the Tyson family of Tyson Chickens, wanted him out, and they bought him out of his contract. My understanding is he had pretty close to a lifetime contract, so I'm sure the buyout. I think that Calipari became a very wealthy man with his buyout, and he goes to Arkansas. He's probably going to be a lot wealthier man when he goes there. What I really think, Mike, is that Calipari is another victim of what I call the nil factor. It started with Nick Saban. These guys like Saban and Calipari, that I think please don't take this the wrong way, and let me finish before you debate me. I think these guys were good cheaters. I think Saban was. I think that Calipari was. I think Bill Self is. And when there was no nil money in the game, these guys were really good cheaters, could keep their programs clean, could get the best players and win championships. And now all of a sudden, nil money, while we think it may have bunched up the power teams, I think it spread out the power coaches. I almost think the nil program is a better deal for young, great coaches like Dusty May going to Michigan, or your Indiana State coach leaving. You know, good young guys are going to get more opportunity now because the cheating isn't going to be as bad because the real money is going to balance that out. So I think Calipari is probably right along the lines of a Nick Saban who, you know, just says, I walk away from it. All right. Well, I don't think Saban ever was going to win like he used to. I think Calipari is reading the writing on the wall. And I think it's the same thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the big question is this: who's the next coach? Because if you check out any Kentucky Facebook message page, the fans are going nuts that they want Rick Pitino back, which I don't know why anybody would want that back. But
I think Mike Woodson would be a great choice.
I think he would too. I think they should take Woody right now and get him the hell away from us. But I would say the first three calls that are probably going to be made are Billy Donovan, Jay Wright, the former Villanova coach, and Danny Hurley at UConn, because Kentucky's got a lot of money they can pay here. And I mean, the question is, would Hurley actually leave UConn? But with the amount of money that could be put there, it's got to make you wonder.
Why would Hurley leave UConn? I mean, are you kidding me?
Why would Schertz leave Indiana State for St. Louis? I mean, because of money.
People you mentioned, could Kentucky stomach Donovan coming to after pounding on him for as many years as Donovan has? Could they stomach that guy coming and coaching their program?
Well, and also Donovan right now is with the Chicago Bulls, but at least he has coached college basketball. He was Rick Pitino's right-hand guy.
Yeah, Donovan would be a great choice for that program. Yeah,
and the guy that I would, if I was Kentucky, the guy I'd go after is Nate Oates, because I think Nate Oates would be a splashy hire. He's a great basketball coach, and you got to think this. He's at Alabama, which is a great program, but they are still a football-first program. If he goes to Kentucky, he's going to make more money. And, you know, I don't think Oates is really a realistic candidate because he's got a ridiculously large buyout that would have to be given to Alabama to get him. Another guy is Scott Drew. But another name that I thought was interesting, since we're Big Ten people, was I saw Brad Underwood popped up on that list also. I think as much as I can't stand Brad Underwood, that would be
a perfect hire. I mean.
Yeah, that would be a perfect hire at Kentucky.
Yeah, that'd be a good hire. Yeah,
it'll fit right in.
How much do you think, let me just ask you, I don't have an answer for this, How much do you think Dusty may be kicking himself going, man, if I'd waited another 2 weeks, I maybe could have the Kentucky job. Is that a better job than the Michigan job or what?
I don't think Dusty May has enough of a name to get the job. It's just
really?
If you're the Indiana Hoosiers, Dusty May or Josh Schertz is a no-brainer hire. Either one of them is a no-brainer hire. But
okay.
The Mike Woodson, so.
How about Kelvin Sampson to Kentucky?
If I'm Kelvin Sampson, I don't know. I've never heard the name mentioned by Kentucky fans. I mean, it's interesting because the guy could definitely coach. But now the thing is this. He's making a lot of money. He's at a power conference with the Big 12, so he's got everything he needs there. So I don't know. You know, if it's Kentucky, they're going to want to go for a big name. The last time they didn't go for a big name, they got Billy Gillespie, which failed miserably. So it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden Rick Pitino's name started popping up either. But just the way the world of college sports is right now.
I think Pitino's done.
He's at St. John's, so he's not done.
I don't know. I think Pitino would be a move like Woodson for Indiana. I just think you're getting namesake.
I don't think so because of this. At least Pitino's had success at the college level. He did turn St. John's around in a year, and they should have been in a tournament, but they weren't. So I don't think it's the same thing because Mike Woodson can't coach. I mean, it's not our fault. And it doesn't matter who they recruit because – they're never getting out of the second round of the tournament unless he gets like five NBA guys. Then they might make it to the Sweet 16. All right, let's move on. We talked about Josh Schertz.
Well, I think the nil money makes it harder for Kentucky to fill their job than it used to be because I think the other coaches now think I'm now going to look at a university not based on its blue blood or its heritage. I'm going to look at it based on what's their nil package. How much money do they have in their nil fund?
And I guarantee you Kentucky has a lot of money in their nil package.
I guarantee you they do. They do. But so do a lot of other schools, and there will be less of a pressure. I mean, let's face it. Whoever goes to Kentucky is going to be expected to revamp that program, and I mean revamp it quickly. And then before we close out on that, did Arkansas – overshoot their expectations? Are they getting their money? Because you know they're going to pay Calipari out the yin yang, and are they going to get what they want, or is this just a name that's maybe going to fill their stadium back up?
Well, they just lost their coach to the West Coast out there with Hugh Musselman at USC. So I think that Calipari is an established. He's a solid coach. He's not a great coach. And the thing is the pressure that much there because Calipari won what? One in the last 15 years. So, and we got Robert who says, yo, from Vero Beach. How you doing, Robert?
Hey, Robert.
And we are going to go ahead now and we're going to look back.
Are there any Big Ten teams open? Is Ohio State, did they fill Ohio State?
Yeah, they just, the guy, Jake, was the guy.
I can see Calipari at Ohio State. I think Calipari wouldn't mind getting in the
He's already got a job at Arkansas.
Well, I think he'd better stay where he's at. Speculation.
Yeah, he's going to Arkansas. Okay. Men's NIT, which I know we both enjoyed watching Indiana State against Seton Hall. Great basketball game. And I think when we watch the first four, we watch a team like Virginia or a team like Michigan State. I think the NCAA selection committee really screwed the pooch here because Indiana State and Seton Hall belonged in the tournament. Now Indiana State loses their coach. And this is something we've seen with a lot of mid-major programs. Fort Atlantic loses Dusty May. Can you replace him or not? And I think a lot of times the reason a team like Indiana State, which goes 28-6 and doesn't get in a tournament, Steve, is to kind of encourage that coach and players to leave to bigger programs. Because if you're sitting there in your Josh Schertz, I hate this. He was making $300,000. He's going to make over $2 million a year at St. Louis. I don't know why you would pick St. Louis other than the $2 million, which is fine. But he was building something at Indiana State. If he brings all those guys back, they're ranked top 25 probably. And then he is in perfect shape to get the job at IU once IU fails again next year. And I mean, I'm serious. I mean, Josh Schertz to me is the perfect Indiana coach. They play a five-out offense. Everybody could shoot the hell out of the ball. They're fun to watch. And that team played with so much heart. And Seton Hall did, too. I mean, Seton Hall's a team that beat UConn by 15 earlier in the year. The fact that Seton Hall and Indiana State weren't in the NCAA tournament, I think, was an absolute joke.
Yes. I thought, boy, this is really dumb. But then the NCAA selection committee pulls this stunt every single year. We always find a couple of teams like Seton Hall and Indiana State that belong in the dance, and they show their wares. And it's almost like I think that the NCAA probably would love for the MIT just to go away, because it invariably you're going to get something like two really solid basketball programs and teams that are playing right now, like ISU. Both those teams have somewhat heritage. And now here
yeah,
they
both make programs have been, you know, yeah, both programs have been to the national championship
game. Both been to the national championship game, and I got to tell you a funny story. I called you right with about a minute and a half.
Yeah, to go. I mean, Steve cost us game. No, there was 3 minutes left.
I called you and I said, bring it home. I said, Mike, just bring it. Have your team bring it home, and hung up the phone. And my wife says, why the hell did you call him? You know, you just jinxed his team. I said, no, man, Indiana State's playing too good to lose this game.
Yeah. All right. Then, Robert says, what about ISU transferring to IU? Is IU even reaching out? I do not know. I haven't heard that. He's talking about the big guy, which would be Robbie Avila. I don't know. I would assume with Robbie, he's become kind of a cult figure. Wherever he goes, he's going to make a lot of NIL money. I did hear that Ryan Conwell had been reached out to by IU. Ryan Conwell is the dude in the semifinal. I think he had like 6 3-pointers. He's a very good player. Actually, anybody on the Indiana State team could start at IU right now because they play hard and they come from a culture where everybody plays hard. And that's what we'll see tonight in the national championship game. That's what we saw yesterday in the national championship game. Indiana has no culture. That's an issue. And the other issue is this. I know I always rip people that say Indiana needs to recruit IU guys or Indiana guys. And I always say, well, I'll take the guard from Japan also. But I will bring up the fact that tonight, Purdue's going to have 11 guys on their roster from the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
How many did Indiana – and Robert, tell me this, because I don't know off the top of my head, but how many Indiana Hoosiers actually were born and raised in Indiana? We'll let him do the research real quick, because me and Steve are old. And you'll tell we'll be down here typing and stuff. But I think this, in the end for Indiana State, I'm afraid this may be a one and done again, like 1979. And it's really sad because you saw the enthusiasm in Terre Haute at the Holman Center, the way they were. So hopefully they could be more like a program like Gonzaga or Xavier, where Gonzaga, the dude that originally started getting into the tournament, leaves for a better job to get Mark Few, and he decides to stay so they'll build a statue to him someday. At Xavier, we've seen Xavier over the last 40 years almost switch coaches every 5 years when that coach would get to the Elite Eight. But until the last couple selections, they've always been able to pick up another young guy that could continue the program. Hopefully that will happen at Indiana State. If they can keep their team together, I think they'll be fine, and they could be a top 25 team next year. But if they start losing those guys, I'm afraid how that ends up there. I went to Indiana State. I don't want to see it go bad, but I've seen it go bad so many times in the past. I'm just afraid that's where it's headed. All right. Yesterday, Steve called me again, and he jinxed Caitlin Clark. Because yesterday, Steve, you called me at the end of the first quarter. Caitlin Clark has scored 28 points or 18 points. It's 28-20 at the end of the first quarter. You call me to tell me how awesome she's playing. And then she scores 12 points the rest of the game, and they lose 87-75. So tonight, Steve, if Purdue and UConn, keep your thoughts to yourself. Do not call me.
I'm not calling anybody.
Don't call anybody, because that is going to cost somebody a shot at a national championship. So
I got to tell you, Mike, you know how bad this is? I love NASCAR, and I have a favorite driver, Chase Elliott. I have this big old hunky Napa sweatshirt that I wear for all races. I put it on no matter what temperature is. I thought, this son of a buck hadn't won a race in a year and a half. I'm not going to put my sweatshirt on. Elliott finishes second or third. He's leading the race with about 10 laps to go, and just because of a restart, got shuffled back 2 spots. I'm thinking, that's it. I'm a jinx. I'm just a freaking jinx. Obviously. So, it's over and done with.
All right. So
I fell in love with Lewis Hamilton in F1, and the guy had won a race since I started liking the guy.
Okay. So Robert Stewart says Leal, Galloway, and Sparks, but he portaled. So there was three Hoosiers on last year's team, and they failed miserably. All right. Next up, we're going to talk a little Caitlin Clark, because there's been some things that have bothered me that I have seen. I saw Lynette Woodard come out the other day and make a big speech about how Caitlin Clark really didn't break her record. I've seen people say that the foul called on Friday night, which was an obvious moving pick, should not have been called in that situation. It was called that way because of Caitlin Clark. And when people say that, they mean because Caitlin Clark is white. And, you know, when you look at it, Steve, I think this is disgusting, because I've also people say, well, what's her name? Alisa Reese is a national champion and Caitlin Clark's not. And then they start talking about Rebecca Lobo, the Boston girl from last year, all these great women's college players. All I can say is this. Iowa yesterday reminded me of the Aurora Red Devils. They didn't have anybody over 6'4". They're playing this behemoth, woman named Steve Risley in the middle in the semi-state, and they somehow win. Yesterday they didn't win, but my point is this. Caitlin Clark didn't win a national championship, not because she was not good enough to win it. She actually took a team that had no shot to ever be in a national championship game to that game. She had no 4- and 5-star recruits. She didn't have any 6'8" drag queens at center. And yes, I said that, and I'm good with it, because that's what it looked like out there. It looked like a big man playing a bunch of little girls. And the thing is, she took that team on her back to a national championship game in 2 consecutive years. She broke records nobody's ever broken before. She doesn't get the publicity because she's white. She gets the publicity because she's done stuff nobody's ever done before. I mean, I actually saw somebody in a comment on a show say, why did Caitlin Clark is the white Larry Bird? Now, how is that possible? Because, you know, Larry Bird's white, too. I think they meant that the female Larry Bird. But when I watched that game yesterday, the skill level between her and everybody else was tremendous. I mean, there's a huge gap between her and everybody else, even if she's not scoring the ball. And the thing that looked like to me, other than the end of the game where she took a couple desperation threes to try to get back in the game, her game, a lot like Bird, is trying to set up everybody else to score. And you see her almost overpass at times when she should probably try to take the game over and score the damn points. So I think anybody that says that, I'll say this. If you put Rebecca Lobo at Iowa instead of UConn, does she win a national championship? The Boston girl, instead of putting her where she was at, if you put her on the Iowa team with nobody around her, does she get to the national championship game? And I think the answer to that is no. You know, Steph Curry took Davidson all the way to the Elite Eight. Does that mean he's not a champion because he didn't win a national championship? Larry Bird lost in a national championship game. Indiana State and Davidson are never that good. They were that good because of Larry Bird. Iowa, never this good. Iowa was this good because of Caitlin Clark, Steve.
No, I agree. This game last night was very reminiscent of the 79 championship game, where Bird was, even though Magic was on the court, Bird was by far the best player. He just didn't have the support around
him. He didn't have Greg Kelser.
Yeah. He didn't have Greg Kelser or Jay Vincent or Berkovich or, you know, I mean, well, I don't know how good Bill Hodges was compared to Judd Heathcote. You would have a better taste or flavor of that than I would. But, I think as I'm watching the game, and I did watch more women's basketball this year than I had.
Did any of the games not have Caitlin Clark in them?
Did what?
Did any of the games not have Caitlin Clark in them?
I watched the IU game, the IU South Carolina game. I did watch that one.
So I would say this, Caitlin Clark.
It was nice to see an IU team play with some heart.
Oh, and that team played with heart. We were down 18, came back, lost by 4. I mean, they played South Carolina as tough as just about anybody, especially in the NCAA tournament. But I just think it's sad that everybody is about empowering women. But when that woman is white, not a lesbian, and she's, you know, engaged to get married to somebody, that all of a sudden then she gets all kind of hate. And the thing about it is this. This is not going to save the WNBA. It'll save the Indiana Fever. And every Indiana Fever game of Caitlin Clark will be sold out and people will pay enormous amount for tickets. The TV ratings for the Indiana Fever will be great. But if the Phoenix Mercury are playing the New York Liberty, nobody's still going to care, Steve.
No, I agree 100%. It's a good thing for, and it's, I'm glad she's going to a state like Indiana because it's a basketball knowledgeable and crazy state. It's a good place for her to go. It's close enough her family's going to be able to come watch her play in the WNBA. So I'm really happy for her. I mean, you know, I'll be the first to admit I was not real crazy with the hype she was getting early in the season, but then I watched her play, and that player is be it male or female, is as deserving of any college player I've ever seen get the accolades that she earned. I think she's good. I think she and the South Carolina coach made it a point to, after the game, to say, I want to single out Caitlin for what she did to elevate the game of women's college basketball single-handedly. And I think coming from the championship coach from the opposing team to make that kind of comment, take the time to say that in the midst of wanting to celebrate your own victory and your own team, speaks very highly to Caitlin, her family, and to everybody, and to girls' women's college basketball.
Yeah, so, it's great for women's college basketball.
Yeah, it is.
The WNBA is still the WNBA.
Yeah, it's a money drain on the NBA. And, but I'm happy for the Pacer fans. Like I said, the men's team, the Indiana Pacers themselves, are having a good season and seem to be on the rise. And now for the Fever to – and again, I don't know about carrying a WNBA team like carrying a college team. I don't.
Well, she's got the Boston girl with her. So, I mean, it's not an empty team. I think they'll be fine. Real quick, we've got Cal, who asked the question, who's going to coach at Kentucky? We talked about that at the start of the show. But I will say this. If I had to guess right now, I would say Billy Donovan. You got any guess, Steve?
I don't think that I could disagree with that. I tell you, I like to see what Sampson does. I kind of like Kelvin Sampson. I mean, he's a name. He's proven to be a good coach at Houston. I think he's gettable. You know, Donovan's out of the college basketball right now. Sampson's one of the hottest coaches in college basketball. He put his team as a number one seed, what, two or three or four of the last years. Sampson would be a good fit there.
All right, and we've got Robert says, I'm worried about Grace Berger, the other number 34 on the Fever with Clark coming to Indy. Why are you worried about Grace Berger, Robert? Make the question quick, Robert, because we're moving on. All right, so next up, we've got, that would be for both of us there, Steve. We've got tonight, the national championship game. The Purdue Boilermakers, for the first time since 1969 when Rick Mount led them up against Lou Alcindor and UCLA, and they got hammered like most everybody else did by UCLA back then, will face the UConn Huskies, who are the defending national champion. They have they've won their games by an average of, what, 20 points over the last 2 years. And we've talked about the great run the 81 team you played on, Steve, went on. It was nothing like this even. I mean, what they have done to teams so far has been unreal. And Alabama played them tough. And at the end of the game, it's still 86-70 or 86-72, and the game ends up being a double-digit win. What kind of shot does Purdue have to bring home their first national championship tonight?
I think the game's going to be a lot closer than you think it is. I mean, I think this is a
– I'm picking more. Purdue, so.
Pardon?
I'm picking Purdue if you'd watch my
show. I'm picking Purdue, too. I think there are multiple things. I think that you know, you break it down. Guard play, I think, is going to favor UConn a little bit. I think they're a little stronger and a little deeper. They've got a solid sophomore guard. They got a kid who's a potential lottery pick. You know, Purdue's premier guard has kind of been struggling in the tournament a little bit.
Yeah, Braden Smith.
Braden Smith's got to step up. I think the big man play, I mean, it's close. I know you like the kid from UConn, but Edie's player of the year. The thing that concerns me about Purdue inside is pretty much everything runs through Edie. And if Edie does not have a good game, or they're able to neutralize him or push him out of the boy in the bucket enough and keep him out there, and I think UConn's got the horses to do it. I think this game swings to favor UConn. I definitely think that it's Edie versus Purdue's or UConn's guards. And I know UConn's center, the big – what's the kid's name?
Klingon.
Klingon, yeah. I mean, he's a solid player. You like him better in the NBA, you said.
I think he's a better player than Edie because I think he's more mobile, especially.
Yeah, I think UConn favors a little bit better bench. And they have the luxury, they have the wherewithal knowledge of having done this last year. A lot of these players are back. Coaching, I think, is a toss-up. I don't think that there's any one coach is going to favor each other. I think both coaches have paid their dues. Obviously, UConn's coach, Danny, what's his last name?
Hurley.
Hurley.
Yeah.
Is he Bobby's brother?
Yeah.
Huh?
I think they're all related, Steve.
Yeah. Are they? Okay, I don't know.
I would say this. I think the game comes down to the guards because we saw last year IU beat Purdue by letting Zach Edey have what he want and trying to shut everybody down. I think most concerning in this game is Braden Smith, who played like crap, but those were his own words. He finished the game 1-for-9 in the field. He had 5 turnovers. His offensive rating of 54 was his lowest since November. The Boilermakers turned the ball over 16 times. If they turn it over 16 times a night, they're going to get beat by 25 points. I think the difference this year has been Lance Jones, a grad transfer from Southern Illinois. He gives Purdue an extra shooter, ball handler, and an athlete that the Boilers lacked last season. I think the other concern you have is Connecticut is a much bigger team physically. Outside of Edie, this is a long team, and that makes it very hard to beat them. They're not real deep. They only go about 6 or 7 deep. And I don't think there's a magic solution to beating the Huskies. And, you know, we had Brad Underwood, who we talked about before, is possibly getting a Kentucky job. He had his team attack star center Donovan Klingon in the paint. And that worked out miserably. You know, Alabama's Nate Oates, we watched him play a different card, which also backfired. You know, and Alabama's big gambit on the defensive end of the floor was playing freshman guard Stephon Castle softly with a big man giving him tons of space to shoot or create shots. It made sense in theory, but then Castle, who was like a 25% three-point shooter, ended up making almost everything he shot. He scored 21 points. UConn has everything. There's no weakness here. And they can turn in, you know, they can turn 2 or 3 quick turnovers by Purdue into a 10-0 run. Purdue has to control the tempo of this game. They have to shoot the ball well. The point spread here, if you're going to bet it, I would say go to BetMGM for the best sports book for betting on college basketball. Also, I want to tell everybody, we'll be back tomorrow to recap the game and also talk some other stuff. Our numbers right now live, and we haven't even put this on YouTube yet, are really good. And I want to thank everybody who's watching. Make sure you send your comments if you have any. I know anytime you get a chance to see a living legend like Steve Risley in person, it's always a privilege and a pleasure. Robert Stewart says, I like UConn's guards. I do too, but Tristan Newton, their best guard, he's been off and on. I mean, UConn, even though they're blowing everybody out, it seems like they'll have one guy play really well, a couple other guys that don't play well, and the one guy picks up the slack. I think the advantage here is this. And when we did the Final Four preview show last week, we had Dr. J on with me because Steve was at the doctor trying to see why he's so handsome. They still haven't figured it out. But he said something that stuck with me. And the fact is this. In 2 years, UConn has not played a game in the NCAA tournament that has been close in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Well, you know, Mike, that's what I was going to ask you. Has UConn faced anybody like Purdue in the last 2 years of this tournament? I mean, have they played a game against a team that I think is a formidable opponent as much as Purdue is? Purdue is a damn good basketball team.
Hey, Alabama was a damn good team, but Alabama didn't hang with them for a while. But Alabama doesn't have a Zach Edey underneath. I still think if you got Braden Smith, Fletcher Loyer, or Lance Jones all play well tonight, I think they've got a serious opportunity to win this game. They also, they won it last year. They replaced three guys. They're back. Danny Hurley is a psychotic coach. His team plays psychotically, and that is a huge compliment coming from me because that means they get after it. They try to impose their will on you. They try to make you quit, and they've been able to do it to almost everybody they've played.
Purdue doesn't quit, though.
That's where I'm going with this because Purdue reminds me 2019. You remember 2018, Kyle Guy, who is the greatest scorer that Lawrence Central High School has ever had.
In the modern era.
You know, the bad thing is, Steve, I would have just went with that instead of speaking up and saying that you were the pre-modern era. But if you remember, in 18, they lost to Maryland and Baltimore County, the 16 seed. And everybody thought, well, they're done. The next year to get in the tournament, everybody's picking them to lose by the second round. But the thing is, that team took a negative, and they made it a positive. You know, it was kind of Virginia against the world. And I think Purdue is doing the same thing right here.
Yeah, after losing last year.
You know, there's been a lot of times over the history of the NCAA tournament, at least when I was growing up, especially in the 80s, where we'll have a team like a UConn that looks like they're about to get a coronation as being this legendary all-time great team. We saw it in 1983 when NC State beat Houston. Nobody saw that coming. We saw it in 1985 where Villanova shoots 90% from the floor in the second half and upsets Georgetown. I think sometimes there is just a team that is destined to win something. Now, the thing that scares me about that is I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, so I know that with this destiny, a lot of times you can be cursed. And Purdue has been cursed if you look at it over the years. They've fallen short in games they never should have fallen short in.
I think this is their year.
I think this is their year also. And I think this, I think a 7.5-point spread, if I'm betting at BetMGM, I will bet that spread all day because Purdue's going to come out and fight their asses off. If they keep the turnovers below 11 and, you know, they can make 12 threes, and all those are big questions here. But the other question is this, how will UConn defend Zach Edey? Will they let him run wild, get what he wants, and just make sure the other people don't beat him? Or will they press out at the perimeter? Because if they press out at the perimeter to limit the big shots, the ball goes to Edey more. And then what you have is, Klingon has had foul issues before. Everybody that plays Zach Edey has foul issues because he's 7'4 and weighs like 280 pounds. There's not many guys like that. If Klingon gets in foul trouble, UConn's bench is not deep, especially underneath in the low post. I think Zach Edey, you could just feed him in the post the entire game if Klingon gets in foul trouble and Purdue could win this game. So I think this is not NC State or Villanova winning those games because Villanova or NC State's going to beat those teams, Houston or Georgetown, 1 out of 10 times. I think if Purdue played UConn 10 times, they would win 3, UConn would win 7. With all that being said, with the senior leadership of Zach Edey, I think Purdue gets it done tonight. I don't think they just cover. I think Purdue wins this game 82-80.
I tell you what, I look at it back. I think if I'm UConn, I don't have Klingon guard Edey. I have Caravan guard him, and I push him out. Even if I foul him a bunch, I push him out away from the far away from the bucket and keep him out there as much as I can, and I let their big guy, Klingon, run free and guard somebody of a lesser quality that he can kind of roam the middle and plug it up because he's been a shot-blocking fool in this tournament and really controlled the defensive paint a lot for you know his team and against the opponent. So I think the way to neutralize Edey is to get him far away from the back basket and keep him out there as much as you can. I think that's going to frustrate him, and most of his points come from in the paint.
So Steve, Purdue wins the game then? Hey, we can't call this a homer pick because you're wearing an Indiana sweatshirt.
Yeah, only because my Purdue one that I ordered hasn't come yet from Fanatics.
What are you doing ordering a Purdue sweatshirt? There's a difference between hoping they'll beat UConn and actually wearing a Purdue shirt.
I've got my reasons.
Well, and we live in Indiana. We both have close friends that are Purdue fans.
Yeah, I've always said, Mike, if Indiana can't win it, I root for Purdue. I mean, you keep it in state.
Well, I just don't want Kentucky
school.
To win.
It's a state school. I have no problem with Purdue. I tell you, one of the sidebars that we talked about off the air is if Purdue should win this game tonight, what does that do to Woodson in Indiana? I mean, do the fans get a little more? I mean, they don't want to sit there. Trust me, the Indiana fans do not want to sit there and listen to a whole summer's worth and year's worth of see my ring. You know, 87's a long time away.
Yeah,
at long. You know, my ring is 43 years old. That's a lifetime for most of the people that are listening to us right now.
Yeah, and it's 47. Your ring's old.
Well, for, you know, 39 years since 87. I don't know what.
It's
getting there. It's a long time.
Somebody could count. Tell us how many years ago 1987
years, I
was.
Think, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was because that was I was a senior in high school. And yeah,
that's the 87 team. That's not even counting the 81 team or the 76 team.
I didn't even know that it wasn't possible that we wouldn't win it every few years.
Do I think Purdue, you know, what's the spread on the game?
The spread is 7.5, which I think
I'm taking Purdue in the points.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a great game. And like I said, I don't bet, so I'm not betting. But I would take Purdue in the points. I think Purdue is going to get some redemption. I love Matt Painter. I've known Matt for a very long time. And you know, we're not drinking buddies or anything like that. But whenever we're in a room together, we go over and say hello and have a short conversation and talk. And I've had nothing but class from him every time I've spoken.
That was at the casino where you were a valet, right?
Yeah, I was a valet, and he was showing up in a limo.
All right, Steve. So we're both picking Purdue. Steve suggests to take the points. I'm going to bet them straight up. I mean, the line was 6.5 before we did this show. It has went to 7.5 in the last hour.
You know, Mike, on paper, I think UConn's is a little stronger team and an easier team to get behind. But I'm going to tell you what, having a ring and having played in this game, you don't play this game on paper. You know, when we went up in 1981, we faced a front line of three All-Americans in Worthy, Perkins, and Al Wood. All three of them were all – two of them were NBA Hall of Famers. And that was the year before – God, thank God Jordan was there. We'd have had to have Dockage on our team.
I know.
Dockage is the only player in the world that can shut Jordan down.
Yeah, and if you don't believe it, just ask Dan Dockage.
Except, he'll tell you that. He's been telling you that on his radio show all month long.
Yeah, well, he does every March because that is.
We won't mention the fact that Jordan was playing with about 105 degree temperature.
Well, we also won't mention the fact that he fouled out after half the game was played. And we also won't mention in the Elite 8 game.
We won't go there, will we?
In the Elite 8 game against Virginia. The score was tied, and we had the ball with a chance to beat Virginia and go to the Final Four, and Dockage turned the ball over. Virginia went and scored, and Stu Robinson missed a shot right at the end of the game.
Yeah, and to follow it up, Dockage, they beat North Carolina that year, don't they? And then what does Indiana do the next game? Don't they lose the next game?
Yeah, they lost to Virginia because Dan Dockage got the ball stolen from him.
Oh, well, we're being catty right now.
We're not being catty. I'm still pissed off about that because I wanted to see Bobby Knight with a week to prepare take on Hakeem Olajuwon and Phi Slamma Jamma in the Final Four.
Oh, we'd have gotten killed.
I don't know because Guy Lewis coached Houston.
Oh, God. Phi Slamma Jamma, that may be the best front court ever to play college basketball.
I don't know if it was the greatest, but they had maybe the greatest center. I don't know. The greatest center ever was probably Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton. But Hakeem Olajuwon, not too far away. But Olajuwon is a dude that didn't really play basketball until pretty much he got in college because he came from Nigeria. So that's not really the Olajuwon that we would see three or four years later in the NBA when he's much more developed also.
Yeah, but I think front court favors Purdue. because of Edie. I just think Edie's just good. I think that Klingon will struggle to guard him one-on-one. If UConn's got to throw a lot of help to shut Edie down, then that's going to free up Purdue. Purdue's got to shoot well. Braden Smith, you know, he's only averaging, 37% from the field, only averaging 8.9 points per game. Yeah. He's got to have a monster game tonight for Purdue to have a chance.
Yeah, Smith, Jones, Lawyer are the key to beating UConn.
Purdue cannot make stupid turnovers. I noticed in the tournament they've been beating teams pretty handily, so they've been getting away with the stupid turnovers. They can't do it.
They had 16 against NC State.
Huh?
They had 16 against NC State.
And how many of those were so good? You know, I mean, they're just careless mistakes. I don't want to say stupid. They're careless mistakes. And they've got to minimize those tonight. They've got to play as perfect a game as they've played all year to have a chance. And by the same token, UConn can't just show up and think they've got another ring either, because Purdue's that good. So I think we're in for a barn-burning game, a good game. And I think it's a big win for college basketball. Maybe we should be looking and saying the NIL program should have been along here a long time ago. Eliminate the power of these high-paid coaches and put the money in the hands of the people that make the games happen, and that's the players.
All right, Steve. Tomorrow, you want to go at same time or not?
Oh, sure. Why not? You know, it's 11 o'clock your time. I was in the shower at 6 o'clock this morning.
Yeah?
I don't do much at 6
o'clock. I woke up at 5 this morning, my time. So.
Well, yeah, but you got a bunch of kids running around your house.
I was like that before that. Yeah, I'm just dogs and kids all over the damn place. It's about to drive me nuts.
The dogs are here quietly laying down by my feet, just being quiet.
All right, Steve, so we will be back at 11 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow because I would
Boiler say, up, baby. Boiler up.
Boiler up is correct. Go Purdue. Josh Schertz, change your mind and come back to Indiana State. All right, guys, remember you can follow Steve at SRisley34 on X. You can follow me at Grilling Truth on X. Make sure you like, subscribe, hit the bell notification on YouTube, and click on the link in the description for BetMGM, the top sports book for getting your bet in on Purdue versus UConn tonight. But for now, for Steve Risley, I'm Mike Goodpasser. You've been watching and listening to The Grilling Truth, where the legends speak.